This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com. Welcome to Dishy Mix. I'm your host, Susan Bratton. Thank you so much for joining us on the show today. I have somebody you're going to have a lot of fun with, Jason Heller. Jason is currently the EVP at the Laredo Group. The Laredo Group does a lot of sales and media training, and we're going to talk about what some of the most important things are to know in the world of digital media today. But Jason is so much more than the EVP of the Laredo Group. He's a digital media expert, a blogger, and an amazing underwater photographer, to name a few things. So we're going to get to know him, but before I bring him on the show, I want to give a shout out to some Dishy Mix listeners. I gave away 3 copies of Joe Pine's book, Authenticity, What Consumers Really Want. And congratulations to Brooke Bryan from Symantec. She's a marketing programs manager there who has a hot new copy of Authenticity in her hands. Also to Mark Marinovich, who is the marketing director at Jan Marini Skin Research. And Matthew Scott, the founder and head coach at the Life's Work Group. I hope you'll all enjoy the book as much as I did. And if you haven't listened to the episode with Joe Pine talking about infusing authenticity into your brand, I hope you will. Last shout out before we get started with Jason is to Scott Epter. Scott's the director of strategy at IMC Squared, a top interactive agency in New York, and he won my precious autographed copy of Ignited by Vince Thompson. He had a fabulous middle management horror story that you can read on the Dishy Mix blog at dishymix.com. I sent that copy, autographed by Vince Thompson, off to Scott. And if you haven't heard that and you are in middle management, that's a great show too. So join the Dishy Mix fan club, which is on Facebook, to find out more about how you can get freebies from my guests in the future. So let's get on to Jason Heller. Jason, on today's show, we will talk to him about synchronicity, about swimming with crocodiles, about kanji-based tattoos, Sir Martin Sorrell, mediocrity reform, and we'll take a little trip through Southeast Asia.
You know, here's Twitter to the rescue, and now I can actually sort of Twitter all of my comings and goings and, you know, all the airports that I'm in and all the messaging that I see and all the cool culture and arts and artifacts. In the early stages in 1998, in the early stages of the digital media world, we became known as one of the first really successful digital media agencies. You know, it's such a liberating feeling to be able to really share my knowledge with other agencies as opposed to keeping it close to the vest. Yes, I am I'm a double agent, and since it's actually a 12-hour time difference on the other side of the world, you can't actually say that I'm doing that at night. You know, I'm just trying to create a better image for sharks and their beauty and grace, because there's nothing more humbling and beautiful than swimming next to a shark with all of its magnificence.
Welcome, Jason.
Hey, Susan. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Well, it was tough to track you down. You've just gotten back from where? Where were you? Thailand this time?
Indonesia.
You were in Indonesia. So that, you know what, I would have saved this question for last, but you have recently been doing underwater photography in Indonesia, Thailand, and Malaysia, and I've never been to Southeast Asia. Can you just tell us the difference between those three places? Just typify them for us a little bit.
Well, besides an extra $1,000 in airfare that you're not used to paying to get to that side of the world, it's just an amazing place to be. The culture is totally different. If you could think of the polar opposite culture to what we're used to here in New York or in San Francisco or Los Angeles or wherever you may be in the U.S., that's what you're looking at there. You know, total paradise, total sort of ancient culture, the architecture, the cultures that we think are old here are really new in the eyes of somebody that's living in a area where you've got 1,000-2,000-year-old ruins and temples, and it's just, it's really, it's balancing if you want to look at it that way.
And what's the difference if you had to typify Indonesia versus Thailand versus Malaysia? Give me a flavor for the three places.
Well, I guess from a tourism perspective, Thailand is definitely a little bit more developed. You have an infrastructure there, the internet cafes up the wazoo. Indonesian internet access is like having two coconuts on either end and a lot of hope. but, you know, amazing biodiversity, really verdant landscapes and really lush coral reefs and, you know, the whole nine yards as far as the whole nature thing goes. But, you know, being a connected individual, it's a little disheartening not being connected to the world. It's actually kind of a double-edged sword. Malaysia is kind of somewhere in the middle of the two, but definitely, you know, from a marketing standpoint, I know that's not what you're asking here, but of course it's like in my veins, but from a marketing standpoint, it's really cool looking at all of the mobile marketing that's happening out there, and the way that they're using their devices, which fortunately for us when we're traveling to that side of the world allows us to stay connected in a pretty interesting way.
Now, I read maybe on a Twitter that you were going to try to Twitter from Indonesia. How did that go?
Ah, you read that, huh?
I'm reading you, baby. I'm feeling you, baby.
Uh-oh. So, yeah, actually, you know, the internet access in Indonesia is incredibly slow. It's like watching the grass grow. So when I go away, I usually put up a little thing on my blog saying I'm going to take a few weeks off. This is after I tried in denial over the fact that the internet access was the pits out there. And, you know, here's Twitter to the rescue, and now I can actually sort of Twitter all of my comings and goings and, you know, all the airports that I'm in and all the messaging that I see and all the cool culture and arts and artifacts and environments that I'm going through, and, you know, hopefully no volcanoes go off or no more tsunamis happen while I happen to be underwater, which if it does, everybody will hear about that first through Twitter, which is kind of interesting.
Now, are you using TwitPic, where you can take a picture with your phone and then Twitter the image?
I'm not, and I'm, you know, you learn something new every day, and that's my learning for the day. I'm going to need to do that.
But we're just getting started. I can teach you so much more.
I'm sure.
But you're here to teach us. So let's segue over. One of the things that I wanted to do, and I want you to be brief about this because I have a lot to ask you, but, and I want you to tell us the story of mass transit. You started mass transit. I asked you about your worst disaster fork in the road, and mass transit was part of that. You've come through it unscathed, but tell us the story of creating your own agency and selling your agency and the bad and good decisions you made so that we can learn from that and not screw ourselves up in the future.
Mass Transit Interactive was an agency that I started together with my ex-partner, Jason Burnham, in 1998, and we literally started the agency out of an apartment in Brooklyn, and we had sort of meager beginnings and didn't have the same kind of expectations of growing a business as you might have if you started a business today, and very quickly went from a small, unknown, independent shop to a digital shop with really large .com and blue chip clients, and within 6 months we had millions of dollars in billings and clients like Alta Vista and shopping.com and Blue Cross Blue Shield and Citibank, and it was really just a great time. We caught a fantastic tail end of a window of opportunity in the early stages in 1998, in the early stages of the digital media world. We became known as one of the first really successful digital media agencies. And unfortunately, my crystal ball wasn't working in the year 2000 when we thought that our trajectory would continue the way that it was going. Turned down a lot of offers from companies like IPG and some of the other really large advertising companies. And then we hit a lull. I like to call it a lull as opposed to the dot-com boom that other people like to call it, in 2001. And we literally got cut off by the ankles, had to let go of the majority of our staff and built the company back up. Started working with Horizon Media in 2003, 2004, and after working with them and helping Horizon Media handle interactive media responsibilities for their clients, ended up selling the company to them in 2005. The other Jason took off and started his own business. I stayed on with Horizon Interactive for a couple of years, helped to build and expand the business, and last year, in 2007, I decided I was going to resign from the agency And that's when I got a call from Leslie Laredo and joined the Laredo Group. And now, you know, it's such a liberating feeling to be able to really share my knowledge with other agencies as opposed to keeping it close to the vest and, you know, always having to hide secrets and approaches and strategies. And, you know, I've got 12 years of experience behind me now. And it was a nice, fun roller coaster ride. But, you know, I guess my only regret is having a crystal ball that was dysfunctional in the year 2000.
So what was the best offer you ever got for your business cash-wise?
Oh, that's a hard thing that's a hard thing to bring back up. It's a very tough memory, to be really honest with you. But, you know, I could tell you that the reason why we didn't take it was that it was actually from IPG in 2000. And the reason that we didn't take it was that they couldn't answer a very simple question, which is, what are you going to do with us once you buy us? And they couldn't answer that question. And in retrospect, I don't know if you want to call it arrogance or if you want to, you know, today it wouldn't be arrogant. Today it would be a wise decision not to sell to a company that doesn't have a firm plan of integration and what to do with you afterwards, which is the same reason why we made that decision back then. But of course, a year after that, the market tanked and our business got cut off by the ankles like everybody else's did back then. And, you know, in retrospect, it's a deal that I probably would have taken if I can look into the future.
Yeah, but the way you made the decision was the right way, and you have at least the satisfaction of that. I want to switch to the Laredo Group. You were talking about how you're able now to fully share the 12 years of agency experience in doing your training with Laredo Group. Laredo Group is primarily, as I understand it, focused on training digital media sellers and digital media buyers in the fine arts of the business. Is that about right?
Yep, that's about right. And Good. We also have a consultancy arm where we work with agencies and media sellers and revenue models and building businesses, and we help with new business pitches and anything an agency or a publisher might need us to come in and help with.
Got it. And very similar to Upstream Group, Doug Weaver, always been kind of in the market together in a positive way, plenty of business to go around, and Doug's been on the show as well. I wanted to know about this, when you can now share openly your experience, what surprises you that when you explain it to people, that it's a very valuable piece of information that kind of surprises you that they wouldn't have known that, or where is there an interesting connect there?
Well, I guess, you know, most of the people that come to our public courses are really looking to learn some of the fundamentals. And although it doesn't really surprise me how many people are entering the market and how many people have been in sort of thrown into the fire in the market, so to speak, and then decide to take a course or whose employers send them to take a course after they've been thrown into the fire for a couple of years. What actually surprises me more, quite honestly, is how many people are working in the industry that need the education and need the courses and who don't take these courses. You know, one of the first steps to being successful in any business, it doesn't matter what industry we're talking about, is having the right education and the right tools for the job. And I think people that come to courses like Laredo Group's courses really are taking that step in the right direction, and they've made that, you know, that first assessment that they need more tools, they need more education. We do find some surprises here and there with whether it's an agency or a publisher that have had people on the job for 2, 3, 4, 5 years with no formal training, with no formal understanding of what they're doing, and they're sort of just winging it. I'd say that's not the norm, but we do see that here and there. But generally speaking, you know, what really surprises me is the number of people I see in the market as opposed to the number of people that are coming to our courses that really do need the education and don't do anything about it.
One of the things that I notice is when you have a room full of people who have been in the industry for anywhere from 1 to 5 years, let's say, so relatively new in the industry, typically younger people, that's what we're, you know, that's how we're growing our business. We're bringing in new recruits and we need to train them. There's a desperate need for training. What I notice is that in general, it's gross generalization, that an individual will have grokked the company's product or service for whom they work. So they'll understand the thing they're selling. They can articulate it and effectively present it. But that they don't have anything to hang it on. They don't have that wider industry knowledge or anything that is kind of traditional marketing rigor or an understanding of how traditional and online work together and how marketers approach their business. So to me, that seems like it's what gets people caught up, is that they know their thing, but not much else out in the ecosystem. Do you find that as well?
I definitely see that as being true. There's also another interesting aspect that I see amongst digital people in particular, and that really is, you kind of hit the nail on the head, that there's so many people working in the digital media world, both on the buying and selling side, that really understand in their silo how to plan, buy, sell, manage, talk about online media without having the context of what marketing is all about,
yeah,
and what business is all about.
Yeah.
And it's truly interesting. I mean, we like to call people that have grown up, and I was one of those people at some point early on in my career where, I had no media background, no sort of formal marketing background when I started Mass Transit. I should say I had a very little formal background when I started Mass Transit. And we were digital natives. We grew up with this as our, as our bread and butter. And eventually we realized early on that if you can't calculate a GRP, and more importantly, if you don't know why conceptually marketers are relying on metrics like a GRP to evaluate a media plan and an investment in media, then you really can't sit down at the table and have an intelligent conversation with anybody other than somebody else just like yourself that knows nothing about the rest of the marketing ecosystem.
Yeah.
And I do see that out there, which, again, I don't see those kind of folks at our trainings, but I do see these digital natives sort of lurking about the industry. And unfortunately, that used to be a fantastic selling point and unique sort of personal selling proposition, and it's moving from a benefit to a weakness.
That makes sense. And, I want to transition just before we go to the break. My last question, I'd asked you if there was anyone in the industry to whom you looked up, anyone that you tracked and watched, and your answer was interesting to me. You said Sir Martin Searle. Why?
Well, if you asked me what my favorite movie was, I wouldn't give you one answer either, by the way. I don't believe in favorites. I think the world is too big a place to have one favorite anything, including mentors or people you look up to. I mentioned Martin Searle as somebody who I've been watching very closely for the last year or so, mainly because I'm an entrepreneur. I'm an entrepreneur in the ad agency business, in the ad agency world. Martin Searle is the CEO of the largest agency holding company in the world. And interestingly enough, over the last year, I've heard him mention Google as a competitor more often than he's talked about Omnicom and IPG. I've watched him acquire publishers. I've watched him acquire technology companies. I've watched him build a business amidst the most monumental amount of change that we've seen in our industry in the last 50 years, and he's done it with grace. And he's done it to a degree under the radar screen with as much press as there is around it. It's still not water cooler conversation, if you will. And it's truly amazing when you think of the size of the ship that he's navigating, that he's actually built this changing business while everybody's struggling. And granted, WPP and all of the agencies under WPP still have the same challenges as anybody else. But, to take the 800-pound gorilla and to adapt it to the crazy times that we live in today is a huge, huge, huge feat. It's easy to move a small ship. It's easy to adapt an independent agency or a digital-only shop, but to take the 800-pound gorilla and adapt it to the year 2008 and the marketing disciplines and some of the technology companies that they've acquired, I've had the pleasure of spending some time with, because I do a lot of training for Mindshare and for some other WPP companies. And it's just truly inspirational to see that there's somebody working at that level that at least gets it conceptually, or at least my perception is that he gets it because I haven't had the pleasure of meeting him yet.
Nice. Well, I have a feeling if he reads a copy of this transcript, which I'll copy and forward to him, he's going to want to meet you.
Well, I'd love that.
I'd love that for you too. So we're going to take a break. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about crocodiles, kanji, and all kinds of things. I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and you are getting to know Jason Heller, the EVP at the Laredo Group. Stay tuned. We're going to thank our sponsors. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And we'll be right back.
Listen to Living Green, Effortless Ecology for Everyday People, a weekly online audio program featuring champions of sustainable living at personallifemedia.com.
We're back. I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and we're with Jason Heller. Jason is the EVP at the Laredo Group. If you need some training, obviously I've found your man. So, Jason, you live somewhat of a double life. You're a agency entrepreneur training the industry by day and, well, maybe not by night, but the other day you're out all over Southeast Asia starting, splitting your time with a company that is really a big passion of yours as well, underwater photography.
Yes, I am I'm a double agent, and since it's actually a 12-hour time difference on the other side of the world, you can't actually say that I'm doing that at night.
Oh, yeah. Hey, that's good. I like that. Good, good, good. So when did you get into underwater photography, and when did this start to be a really big thing for you? Because it's a really big thing for you now, isn't it?
It is. I became a professional underwater photographer as a part-time balancing activity, you can say. I'd say maybe 4 or 5 years ago when, you know, being a media guy sitting behind a desk all day and dealing with analytics and numbers and wallpapering offices with spreadsheets just sort of started to eat my soul up inside, and I needed something to balance my life. Started scuba diving, decided that I wanted to bring back some pictures from my friends, and this guy, you should have seen my office 4 or 5 years ago. I had pictures everywhere. I forced my staff to watch my slideshows. It was such a pathetic little thing. And from there, it just sort of turned into a passion, a very, very expensive passion, I would add, and eventually turned into a secondary career.
So you have a website. It's divephotoguide.com, and you've got some beautiful images up there.
Thank you. How are
you making money? How can we, as Dishy Mix listeners, support you in funding your passion? What do you need us to do? We need to hire us for something. What is it?
Well, divephotoguide.com is actually a media company that I started with my wife, and unfortunately, we don't take any out-of-context advertising on the site. We're only working with in-category advertisers. There is another site that I run, which is my personal photography site, which is jasonheller.com. That one's pretty easy to remember. And ironically enough, I'm moving with that site from the media side of the industry to the creative side of the industry. And I'd love for any art directors or creative directors who need underwater photography. I do plenty of fashion work underwater beyond shooting coral reefs and sharks and all sorts of fun stuff in the ocean, to take a look at my work. And I've been shooting for some advertising agencies and some clients both here and abroad. And, you know, it definitely doesn't pay as well as media, but it's a lot more fun.
Mm. And you also put me in touch with some of the people who are mentors for you in the photography world. I was looking at Howard Schatz, S-C-H-A-T-Z, and he's a fashion photographer, and he has a series that you have to, if you're listening to the show, you have to go to his site. The work he did with models and their mothers is so beautiful. To see the beauty of these young, perfect women and their mothers and how beautiful they are in their age, too. That was really heartwarming. And then the other one you pointed me to, who's a mentor for you, is David, is it Dubilet?
Yep, David Dubilet.
David Dubilet, and that's David, D-O-U-B-I-L-E-T. And what I mentioned about the crocodiles is that he has some amazing underwater shots where he's swimming with crocodiles. Do you ever get close to any scary animals like that in your work?
Well, you know, I haven't actually worked with crocodiles yet, although I plan on it. I do a lot of photography with sharks. In fact, I've swam in the Galapagos Islands in a school of, I'd probably estimate, of about 1,000 to 2,000 hammerhead sharks, and shot away at them, and I've worked with other species of sharks as well. And, you know, sharks have this persona that the media has created, that they're these evil creatures. And the reality is that 100 million sharks a year are getting killed because, you know, we as humans are slicing off their fins and serving shark fin soup all throughout the world, particularly in Asia. And especially when I go out to Asia, it's just so upsetting to see shark fin soup on the menu everywhere. And, you know, I'm just trying to create a better image for sharks and their beauty and grace, because there's nothing more humbling and beautiful than swimming next to a shark with all of its magnificence.
Well, that is how you're bringing your contribution to the world, is through raising awareness of the beauty of these animals, which I think is great. It's funny, too. I was just thinking about, I just got a new camera and I'm loving it. And for all of us who don't have your talent, I just got the Canon PowerShot G9. Do you know about
that? Oh, that's an awesome camera.
Oh, my God. It's a good camera. I take a lot of pictures, mostly of people, because I love people. That's why I do Dishy Mix. And I'm always taking pictures of people. I got a Sony CyberShot. What a hunk of junk. Couldn't get a good picture out of it. I was sitting at the TED conference with watching this guy in front of me taking the pictures that I wanted to take. And I said, hey, what's your camera? And he said, oh, it's the PowerShot, Canon PowerShot G9. And I said, oh, so do you think I could handle that? And he said, look, this is the point and shoot for all the National Geographic photographers. And I said, hey, wait a minute. You're the editor of National Geographic. You're the photo editor of National Geographic, aren't you? And he said, yeah. I said, so you know all those guys and what they use. He said, exactly. I went out and bought that camera, and I have been taking gorgeous pictures comparatively.
Hey, well, remember, it's not the camera, it's the photographer, so pat yourself on the back.
Oh, well, I don't know. Maybe a little composition. I'm learning how to use it and what all the little pieces mean. But so if you're listening to Jason right now and you're thinking, oh, God, I can't take a good picture, I can tell you that an upgrade of a camera, it was like $500 for this camera. It's the same price as some of the little point-and-shoots, but just a fabulous piece of equipment. I love it.
Yeah, I've heard really good things about that. Hey, by the way, I just wanted to mention, you know, before you had talked about my mentors, Howard and David.
Yeah.
And just for all the listeners out there, there's a word that I like to think of when I think of these two guys. And I think everybody, you know, I mentioned earlier that I don't like to say I have one favorite in anything.
Yeah.
But the word that I think of when I think of the two photography mentors I have is the word virtuoso.
Mm.
You know, virtuoso, somebody that's the absolute best at a particular craft or at a particular hobby or activity. And, you know, that's something to strive for. And it's, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, when you're doing something artistic or you're doing something that requires so much skill, and it's, you know, not as objective and not as scientific as what we might do in the media world or in the marketing world, for example, where, you know, yes, it's subjective, but there's a lot more sort of scientific knowledge, factual-based background to it. It's amazing to see people take their passion and turn it into something that's just so light years above what the rest of the world is doing. And I have to stress to anybody listening to this show that you have to check out these two guys' websites, because it will blow your mind what they do.
Well, I will put the links, the related links, right next to your episode. They're in the transcript, and I'll also post them on the blog so that no matter where you go, you can find them.
There we go.
Here's another one word that I know about you, and that is the word synchronicity. I asked you what book you most recommend to your friends, and you said it's the same book by two different, or not the same book, but the same title by two different authors. Tell us about that.
Well, I've got a friend of mine, another gentleman who I'd say I've looked up to over the years, a guy by the name of Robin Johnson. We might know Robin. He started InfoSeek back in the days. And Robin, who's just another brilliant mind, one day I had lunch with him, and we got into some philosophical discussion about life and business. And without any request or any motivation on my part, 3 days later, 2 days later, I get a shipment from Amazon, and there's three or four books in there, and a couple of them are about quantum physics, and two of them are these two synchronicity books. And we got into this conversation about that perfect day. Susan, have you ever had that day where everything goes right, and you think to yourself, oh, I wish this can be every single day in my life?
I have that a lot.
You know what? That's synchronicity. And you know what? The people who have synchronicity in their life, A, attract other people who have synchronicity in their life. And the concept of synchronicity is really an a-causal connecting principle. It's it's something more than coincidence, but not quite spiritual, if you want to look at it that way. And I highly recommend the book because it's kind of, you know, for lay people, I usually describe it as the power of positive thinking on steroids. It's about keeping your energy aligned with the universe and the world, and not just being positive, but, you know, getting into that vibe, getting into that groove, and really, you know, making things happen. And it's not just coincidence, and it's not just thinking positively. There's an energy about it, and people that have it attract other people that have it, and then it builds upon itself. And the guy who discovered or created this concept is a quantum physicist, actually, who had a lot of disagreements with Einstein, a guy by the name of Carl Jung. And then it was adapted into a more sort of business publication late in the 70s by the son of the district attorney that was going to try Nixon on his for the Watergate fiasco. And he ended up actually becoming the head scenario planner for the Dutch Shell Oil Company, and just amazing, amazing, brilliant mind, and talks about how all of these things just fell into place for him because of this concept of synchronicity. And, you know, I certainly give a lot of credit to my success over the years to my belief in this, and I've had a belief in it without realizing I had a belief in it until the day that Robin Johnson sent me this book, and I read the book, and it changed my life.
Wow. That's a good story. I will post links to Synchronicity, both by Carl Jung and Joseph Jaworski as well. And, you know, thinking about being positive in your life and creating happiness through the synchronicity, I asked you the axiom about by which you live your life, and you actually believe so strongly in this axiom that it is tattooed on your body in kanji. Tell us about
yes.
it.
Well, it's this concept I have of knowing yourself and knowing what makes you happy and pursuing your dreams and pursuing your desires. And at some point in my life when I was a teenager, late teens, I decided I really wanted to get a tattoo because, of course, that's what you do when you're that age. And I had to do something that I knew I would want to keep on my body for the rest of my life. So I had to go with sort of this axiom of the way that I live my everyday life. And essentially the phrase is translated pretty literally from kanji into English as with self-knowledge comes happiness. And it's something that I've always really believed in, that, you know, you kind of live these, you know, daily grind lifestyles, and, you know, it's, yes, we all want to be successful, and yes, we want to make a lot of money, but at the same time, you need to do it in the spirit of what's true to you and what's true to the essence of what makes you you, and, you know, live your life with full transparency and ensure that everybody understands who you are and what you represent, and not put out, you know, false image of yourself, because ultimately, eventually, over time, the only person you fool is yourself. And I feel that, you know, this concept combined with other things like synchronicity. And, you know, the irony of all this, by the way, is this is how I thought when I was in high school, before I actually knew what any of this stuff meant. Fortunately for me, I thought that way because most of my friends from high school are still doing what they were doing in high school. I'm probably one of the few people that's not from my peer group back then. I remember my mom coming into the office when we first started mass transit, like a year into the business. She comes into my new staff and says, "You should have seen this guy a few years ago." I thought that was kind of funny. Way to embarrass your son.
But you love your mom.
Oh, yeah.
You have come so far. You're also in a transition time where you're leveraging the experience that you've had and sharing that with others. That's a way you're giving back. You're exploring and living into your dream of being and becoming even more so an underwater photographer. And you're giving back by showcasing the beauty of the ocean. You're married. You have a Siberian husky. You have a really cute caricature. Who did your caricature?
The same guy who did the logo for my underwater photography website did my caricature, and my wife calls that my Colombian drug lord caricature.
Right, he's a little swarthy, isn't he? Yeah, he's more swarthy than you are, but he's very masculine. He's very macho. He's really
Are you calling me unmasculine?
No, I'm just calling your character particularly masculine.
that's my Colombian drug lord alter ego.
I love it. And if you want to see your Colombian drug lord alter ego, you would go to Digital Blur, because that's your blog and the place that you have a repository for some of your media post writing and your columnist for them. So that's where you put that, right?
Yep, and it's actually thedigitalblur.com.
Yeah, thank you.
Unfortunately, you know, sometimes you want that perfect URL, and it's taken already. But there's a purpose, just like anything I do in my life, there's a purpose behind the name of that blog. And really, I started the blog just shortly before I left Horizon Media, knowing that I was going to go out into the world. And actually, I originally thought that I might end up doing some consulting, but I predominantly thought I was going to be doing photography before I got a call from Leslie Laredo at Laredo Group. And the reason behind the Digital Blur is that we live in an age where the line between media and creative and media and technology is blurring. And also, things are moving so quickly that we live in such a blur. So the Digital Blur, to me, is just such an appropriate name for the times that we live in as it relates to media and marketing and the challenges ahead for us in terms of that line in the sand that used to delineate our roles, our responsibilities, the way we thought, our approaches, is now disappeared. And we need to be collaborative, and we need to work together harder to be successful and to achieve a result for clients or for our own brand. And what better way to describe it than the Digital Blur?
I love it. This is a perfect place to stop. We've got to let our listeners get back to their lives. I know, made an impact on our listeners' day today. Thank you for that, Jason.
Oh, I appreciate that, Susan. I'm glad to get my dishy mix on today.
Get your dishy mix on. I'm really glad you came on. I could just hand the microphone to you, walk away, go out to lunch, get my toenails done, come back, and you'd still be saying fabulous, interesting things. So
I'd like to put a
date on your calendar for maybe next year. I want to have you back on again and see what you're up to. We're going to track you.
Hey, that'll be fantastic. The one thing I would say is that, you know, again, for sure, this new role that I have, I am loving the ability to share all of this stuff that's been bottled up inside of me and protected and intellectual property with other agencies and with the world. And, you know, the Laredo Group has given me the opportunity to do that. And I feel like there's this, you know, very beneficial monster that has come out of me. And, you know, I don't have to keep anything close to the vest anymore. And it's just, it's a wonderful feeling. And, you know, you had mentioned being able to share things with the world. And, you know, I feel like I'm finally able to do that. And it's a fantastic feeling.
Well, you heard Jason. He's ready to give it to you. So you better go get it. All right, Jason, thanks so much for coming on the show. It was a pleasure for us all to hear what you had to say. And I am your host, Susan Bratton. You've been listening to Jason Heller, EVP of the Laredo Group. And I will make sure I post all those links for you. I hope you will forward Dishy Mix to a friend if you've enjoyed it today. And don't forget, we have transcripts of the show for you at personallifemedia.com. Have a great day. I'm your host, Susan Bratton, and I hope I'll get to talk to you next week.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.